ॐ योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचां मलं शरीरस्य च वैद्यकेन योपाकरोत्तं प्रवरं मुनीनां पतञ्जलिं प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि. ऐ बौ टु दि एमिनेंट सेज पतञ्जलि, who removed the impurities of the mind through yoga, of speech through grammar, and of the body through medicine. We have been discussing the process of concentration. In our last class, we did the first two steps. The first step is to focus on any object to the exclusion of either other object. When we can do it, our mind stands absolutely still, almost identified as it were with that object. Then what happens? The mind gets all the knowledge belonging to that particular object. Then the next step is, even though a person is able to focus on an object, he is aware of the name, he is aware of the idea, and he is also aware of the knowledge. Our normal condition of the mind is that we mix up these, the sound or the name and the idea and the knowledge. But when concentration comes, we can break up these three. Automatically it happens. But still, all these three take place within time and space and causation. Then the next step would be to focus on any gross object, but on its without the interference of time, space and causation. When a person becomes so absorbed, he is not aware of time. It happens even to us. Let me give a small illustration. Suppose you are reading a book and you are absorbed in it. You forget time. When you forget time, you forget also space and also why you have forgotten. You forget also why you have forgotten. This is the highest step of concentration from the lowest point of view. Then we progress. And to understand that, let me again remind that every object in this world is a result of the combination of five gross elements. These are called space, air, fire, water and earth. Any object you take, any gross object, and it is consisting of all these five. Now this is gross. As we know, anything gross is an effect. And if there is an effect, wherever we find an effect, we necessarily have to deduce a cause. So what is the cause? Where from this earth has come, where from the water has come, where from the fire has come, what is its cause, from which element has it come? So Vedanta or Sankhya has found it out, and again through meditation only, because these objects you cannot guess. So what are those five elements called? Five subtle elements. So now the concentration moves into the next higher step, which is meditation on this any subtle object. Again, to illustrate, we have got a gross body. We also have got a subtle body. Now, the gross body is the outcome of the subtle body. What do we mean by subtle body? We all know. Subtle body means our thoughts, which is in short called our mind. And our mind is consisting of, first of all, our mind consists of vasanas. Our subtle body consists of vasana. Vasana means deep desires at their very subtlest expression. And these vasanas, they express themselves in a conditioned way, in a limited way, through repeated practice. Then that is what we call samskara. Samskara means vasanas concretized in time, space and causation. I gave many times an example. Suppose, you know, we all have different food habits. The desire, the pleasure we receive from food is universal, east, west. But the particular type of food which gives us the greatest pleasure or which repulses us is all due to the habit. Perhaps we are born in a particular part of the world and we are accustomed to what our parents eat. Just to give an example, it happened in Swami Vivekananda's life. You know, is in West Bengal, and these Muslims, they all smoke that guda guda, we call it. What is that? Hubble bubble. Of course, Swamiji didn't carry, but in a pipe. And what happened is they have taken, Swamiji had taken some of these tobacco, specialized tobacco. And he became friends with somebody on the ship. They became buddies. And Swamiji said, "Oh, I will give you something so marvelous that you think that this is heaven." And he offered it to that man. He took one puff. And I don't want to describe what he did. See, in every way, whether it is smell, whether it is taste, we are accustomed. Similarly, it's a very common experience. A person who is brought up on a pure diet of classical music, you make him listen to some Bollywood cinema songs or some rock and rock music. Similarly, you make this person listen to rock music. The love of music is common, but its specialized experience depends upon habit. That is called samskara, limited by time, place, habit, tradition, what we see, etc., etc. So this is samskara. Samskara produces desires, concretized desires. For example, if you ask me, so what would you like to eat? If God, if Holy Mother comes and says to my son, I am ready, what would you like to eat? But first, let us talk about Moksha Mother. No, no, Moksha I will give to everybody. But what type of food do you want? And suppose Mother says, you ask, do you want Bengali some curry? Mother, I had enough of it. So, why don't you have some first-class hot idli, sambar, if you give, it will be marvelous. The mother will be disappointed. What does she want? She wants me to enjoy. But in what form? This is where we all fight with each other because we are so unintelligent. I don't want to use a stronger word about religion. What is it? This is a building. What do you call it? It's bricks, made out of bricks. A temple. Why can't a Christian come and pray there? After all, it is a building. Is not a church a building? Is not a mosque a building? No. This fellow, he will come, a Muslim will come, sees a church, chops up the top only. Have you noticed? Only the top. And puts a different shaped dome. And he this. God likes this place. And again, after a few years, the Christian comes, he chops up that one and brings back his old shape. He calls it a church. And if it happens to be Hindu, then he will cut it off and he will make a kind of tower like that. He calls it temple. This is what Kaaba Mekia, Kaaba Mekia. Kabirda's song is there. It is the same God. But why are we so quarreling about each other? That's because we do not understand that in essence it is the same. So these samskaras or habits produce desires. And the desires express themselves in specific type. I want only this. I do not want this. I wish only this. And those desires translate themselves into thoughts. For everything that we do, this is what really happens. And those thoughts express themselves in appropriate planning and execution of the plan, and the result will come. This is called karma. Karma is divided into two parts. Doing is the first part, and enjoying or experiencing the result, karma phala, is the second part. And the karma phala produces two types. One is instantaneous, immediate satisfaction. For example, if someone eats a chocolate, then immediately there is a satisfaction. Suppose he is hungry, the appeasement of the hunger. And at the same time, there is a pleasure if it is a tasty food. That is only short-term effect. But there is a long-term effect. This food is very nice. This food is not at all tasty. This is called, what is this called? Samskara again goes back. This is a cycle. The whole cycle is there. Anyway, what is the point that we are discussing? If there is an effect, there must be a cause. So all our actions, where are they really produced? That's why Ramana Maharshi always used to say, find out the origin of your thoughts, your mind, your thoughts. Where from a thought is rising? Latu Maharaj also, in his reminiscences, he mentioned this one, so wonderful. Where from this your thoughts are arising? There is only one source. What is that source? You know, if you are aware of a thought, what should come before the thought? Awareness. If you are not aware, there would be no thought. That's why in deep sleep, there is no thought at all. In waking, in dream, there is a thought. But before a thought arises, what should be there? There must be consciousness. And that consciousness must be aware. There is nothing now, but there must be a thought. If you want to understand this phenomena, of course, you should be very careful. As soon as you get up, the mind is in a very semi-conscious state. Then, as soon as your first thoughts start, you pay attention to your mind. What thoughts? Before you even wake up fully, there is a state when you are aware of certain thoughts. We do not normally pay attention to them. As soon as a man gets up, suppose he is given a task in the office and he has to complete, that day will be the last. Or a student had to appear in an examination and he knows he has gone to bed, he has prepared well, he has gone to bed. And as soon as he gets up, what would be the first thought that would be running in his mind? I have an examination to write, to attend to. And then only he will notice the other people, have you seen? But before to notice that thought, what is the first thing that comes? Awareness. That is why, what is the first word that comes before we utter anything? I. What is that I? It is called ahankara. What is that I? It is of the nature of reflected consciousness. When a person becomes adept in concentrating his mind on any gross object, as his mind becomes more concentrated, it becomes like a magnifying glass. And as he takes nearer the object, as it were, reveals, I am not one single object, I am a combination of five elements, gross elements. And when he becomes more concentrated on that gross object, then he forgets time, space and causation, then the result would be, he gets complete knowledge of that object. So this is the advantage of concentration. That is why Swami Vivekananda said, the very essence of education is concentration. You concentrate. Afterwards, you choose your subject. On any subject you put your mind, the knowledge will be revealed to you. The more the concentration, the better a person. There is a word, knowledge is power. You know, how do you get knowledge? Concentration. So concentration is equal to knowledge. Knowledge is equal to power. And when a person has power, what is that power? Do you know what that power is? If I have power over an object, I can do whatever I like. And what do you think I will be doing? I will be doing only what gives me the greatest joy or happiness or pleasure, is it? So this is what happens when a person focuses on an object. That object reveals its nature and the result is the man has power. And if that object is not good, then he will turn away from it because he has the power. If the object is good, then he will focus more upon it. That means he can do whatever he likes. He is the master. Now let us keep that point in mind because we are the opposite. The opposite is we know some things are not good, but we know it, but we don't have power. Now, why do you think we do not have a power? Because we do not have concentration. And because we do not have concentration, we do not have complete knowledge of that object. And if we do not have complete object of that knowledge, then we become enslaved. This is called maya, lingering look. Even though I know it is not good, but I still, my mind doesn't listen to me, I go about it. This is how we are caught. Whereas this man is a master, because he knows. He has complete power. Power means he has complete knowledge. He has complete control over it. When he wants, he can have it. When he doesn't want, simply says no. One example. You know, one man asked me, after reading the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, one day Sri Ramakrishna was completely annoyed with somebody. And then, at the end of this class, this man asked me, even a great saint like Sri Ramakrishna, he also gets angry. What then is the difference between his getting angry and our getting angry? It's a wonderful question. You know, there's some of us who think he never really gets angry. No, he can get angry. At least Swami Vivekananda, do you know, he used to get angry very often and very intensely. The only person, we like Holy Mother. Do you know why we like Holy Mother? She never gets angry with us. So that's what we want. No, these people, do you think they get angry at a puny object like that? This is controlled anger, because they have complete power. The idea came to me and said, even great people behave as though like us. The difference is, they do not behave unconsciously controlled by their unconscious mind. Whatever they do it, first of all, they don't do it. Who does it? The divine does it. Secondly, even if you think they are doing it, they have complete control. What does it mean? Sri Ramakrishna, he got annoyed with this man. And next second, he goes into deep samadhi. When you get annoyed, what happens to you? Even if you want, you can't even sleep, let alone go into samadhi. This is the difference. They have perfect control. Why? Because they have perfect knowledge. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of not only the object, knowledge of their own minds. They know what they are. What is our knowledge? I am the body and mind. What would be their knowledge? I am the divine. Let us never forget this. So this is what happens. Then this man's mind, after analysis, he turns into the second step, which is called vichara samadhi, savichara. Vichara means, as it were, is analyzing, deep thinking. Vichara, the Sanskrit word means deep thinking, analyzing, discriminating. So, what is the cause of this object? So, as I mentioned, every object in this world is a combination of five elements. Pancha, maha, bhutas, stula, maha, bhutas. Now, one point we have to remember it. If we know that everything is five gross elements, do you know what happens as a result of this knowledge? If everything is made up of this object, that this is valuable and this is not valuable, this is very covetable and this is not at all covetable, that kind of valuation is completely lost. You remember, Sri Ramakrishna had a desire to eat a sweet meat called sandesh, put it in his mouth, and he started discriminating. After some time, he said, oh mind, this sweet meat is also made up of five elements. What is the big deal of difference between this and a little bit of clay? And after that, the desire for eating, that has never again arisen in his mind. So these two points let us keep in mind. When a person has complete knowledge of any particular object as the combination of five gross elements, the first thing that happens is he has tremendous control. The second thing that happens is his discrimination, raga and dvesha, that is, this is valuable and this is not valuable, totally disappears. Now what happens? When a person doesn't have any same valuation of any object, do you know what happens? He becomes free from raga and dvesha. That means he doesn't have likes and dislikes. That means he doesn't have bondage. When a person doesn't have likes and dislikes, then that person is completely free from this bondage. That is what happens. His egotism disappears. Our ego is full of what? Likes and dislikes. That's all. If anybody says, I am very proud, you observe anybody who is proud, there must be a cause of his pride. Either he is a beautiful body, he or she, or beautiful voice, or some talent, either for writing or cooking or creating mischief or whatever it is. But if a person doesn't have that discrimination, he says everything is wonderful, everything is same. You know, taka mati, mati taka. Clay is coin, coin is clay. Then do you think Sri Ramakrishna ever paid any attention to money? Why? Because in his mind, both are same things. Not only that, that's not the only knowledge. Then he went beyond. Then he says, then who will look after me? Who will look after me? He who created the world, universe, that divine mother or Ishvara or God, he will look after you. In fact, when you are thinking, I have to look after myself, it is complete nonsense, because you don't know what next second is going to bring. Yeah, the roof may fall, something may happen. We don't know. So what we don't know, we have no power. That means when we have no power, then we have no knowledge. Do you see, knowledge is power. Power means control. Now here there is no knowledge, and therefore there is no control. And we have no control means what? We are slaves. We are helpless people. So the next stage is, this person clearly perceives, this is a gross element. Then if this is gross, when you see a tree, you have to guess there must be a seed somewhere. Then the next stage is, what is the seed of this? So our Patanjali Rishi proceeds and says, the next stage of concentration is on this subtle object. Everything has got a subtle thing. Now we talk about human personality, consisting of three layers: the gross body, subtle body, and the causal body. We know that. Human beings. What about this microphone? Does it have three elements or not? By implication, everything, if my body has got, then this is also a body like anything else. It also has got a subtle element. So what is the subtle element? Next, the gross part of the earth has its subtle, comes from the cause, which is called the subtle five elements. Sthula Mahabhutas. Five elements, but they are subtle. And those, from those subtle elements, these gross elements have come. So actually, this also has got, you know, scientists nowadays, they analyze. So you see here, piece of paper. When they analyze, what do they get? Atoms, right? When they analyze the atoms further, what do they get? Electrons, neutrons, protons, etc. And when they further analyze that, they get something still divisible, go on dividing. Dividing means what? Go back to their causes. And ultimately, the final thing that they come, they called it matter. And then matter, they discovered something wonderful. Matter is also, there is a gross form of something is called matter. The subtle form of matter, what is it called? Energy. Energy. Swami Vivekananda, in his introduction to this Raja Yoga, he gives an elaborate introduction and says there are two elements from which this whole universe has come. What is the name of those two elements? One is called Akasha. Akasha is equivalent to matter. Then the second, Prana. Prana is energy. This energy and matter, they are interacting with each other. And then he goes further and says, both of them sprang from one single cause. And according to Sankhya, that cause is called Ahankara. I am elaborating so much so that the idea, we get clear idea that every gross object has got behind it as its cause the five subtle elements. Sthula Mahabhutas are gross five elements. Behind, they have sprung, they have originated from Sukshma Pancha Mahabhutas. So every object in this world. So the next stage, which is called Vichara, Savichara Samadhi, that is concentration with discrimination, is nothing but focusing on the subtle elements. And again, let me put it this way. Suppose somebody says, you focus on the subtle body of any person, say Ramakrishna. First time, what do you do? You see the gross body. Here is a face, here is legs, here is hands. And after some time, you by focusing, you forget time, space and causation. And you reached the peak of the lowest state. And then, is that all? Ramakrishna. He also has got a subtle body. Just like us, he has also got a mind. So you focus on his mind. What does this mind consist of? Four things. Every mind called in Sanskrit antahkarana or inner instrument has got four elements. What are they? Ahankara, manas, cogitation, chitta, the receptacle of memory, and buddhi, the factor which decides everything, has got. Ramakrishna's subtle body also, mind also must consist of those four. What is the difference? The difference is, his ahankara consists of pure reflected consciousness, uncontaminated by rajas and tamas. And his buddhi decides that. He has only buddhi, means that factor which makes us decide. He decided in his life only upon one thing. Do you know what is that one thing? I only want God, nothing else. Everything must fall into that. Our mind is scattered. You see, even that's why Thakur's illustration are so marvelous. He said, when does a man realize God? What did he say? When three things are combined together and directed towards God. So what illustrations did he take? He took the illustration of a chaste wife. What is she thinking of? All her thoughts are focused, fixed on what? Only her beloved husband. And what is the second illustration? A mother who has only child. All her thoughts are also fixed on the child only. And what is the third? Very interesting. A miser. What is his mind fixed upon? So why Sri Ramakrishna gave this particular example? Because even though they are worldly examples, we can only understand things if we have to know some new factor, and it can be conveyed only through known factors. And we know these three to some extent. So, he says, miser. All his mind is there. What was Sri Ramakrishna was also the greatest miser on earth. Because his mind was fixed only, I want no less than God. Infinite. We all want small chutka things. A little bit mixer, a little bit this, a little. But Sri Ramakrishna says, I don't care. I want the real stuff. Then his mind is always cogitating. What is this? What is this? What do you think he was cogitating? A man goes there and meets him. He looks at that person. What do you think his mind works, you know? Is this a devotee? Or is this not a devotee? If he is not a devotee, then his thoughts will go and see the buildings. But if he sees even little bit of potentiality for spiritual life, please come and do a little bit service. All these things will come. Then his memory. You know, we also have memory. Where is our memory? You know, interesting question. How do you know what your memories are? But what is your chitta or memory? That receptacle of memory is filled with? Usually, it is filled with a mixture of both spirituality and also worldliness. How much? 50-50. One horse and one rabbit. How do we know? Analyze your dreams. In your dreams, if you are seeing sadhus, spiritual personalities, gods, goddesses, places of pilgrimage, temples, etc., etc., are beautiful songs being sung, that means your mind is more inclined to, because we only remember what we are interested in. So, Sri Ramakrishna's subtle body we are describing. Now, this is what Sri Ramakrishna's subtle body is there. And you meditate upon it. Take any part of it. Whether you want to meditate on his ahankara, egotism, you want to meditate on his memories, you want to meditate upon his mind or discrimination, or you want to meditate upon his that faculty of decisiveness, then you will see that is the meditation upon the subtle point. Now, any object has got this subtle part of it. And that subtle part is the result of the combination of five subtle elements. So, the next, Savichara Samadhi, take any one of them. That's why I was giving this illustration. Think of, say, Ramakrishna. And now, I also want to point out, suppose you seriously start thinking about Sri Ramakrishna, and every day most of us do that. But you analyze and say, which part of Sri Ramakrishna's personality am I focusing? Which part of Sri Ramakrishna's personality am I focusing? Suppose you are focusing on what Sri Ramakrishna used to eat. Don't eat, just making fun. That means, what are your interests in? Supposing you are remembering so many incidents that he was discriminating. That means you are focusing on his discriminating faculty. So you can choose which part of the personality of Sri Ramakrishna you want to focus upon. That is called the Nirvichara. And when you are conscious about time, space, after 10 minutes, okay, I had enough of this concentration on Sri Ramakrishna's meditative faculty. Now let me move on. How he reacted towards certain incidents. Then you are moving to, still moving in time, space and causation. But a time will come. You fix only on that one particular aspect of Sri Ramakrishna. Or this is also known as Gunadhyana. Meditation on the qualities of Sri Ramakrishna. Your mind forgets time, space and causation. You have reached the peak of second step, which is called Savichara Nirvichara Samadhi. Savichara means concentration on the subtleness of any object within time, space and causation. Nirvichara means the same focus, but now you are so much absorbed, you are not conscious of time, space and causation. When you have reached the peak of the second stage, higher stage, what happens is, there is no object which needs to be concentrated by you. Because when you have reached that power of concentration, then the whole universe has revealed itself to you. Now, again let me come back. This whole universe has got the gross element and also the subtle elements. Every object is a result of five gross objects. And every object is also, every gross element also comes from its subtle elements. And once you have known the whole world. What is left out? There is no object at all which is left out of your focus. You have understood everything. Just as an illustration, when you can see the whole universe as an expression of energy, then do you have any more further knowledge to be known? Absolutely none. You reached the peak of any object. That means you have tremendous power. You have tremendous control. Because concentration gives knowledge. Knowledge gives power. And power gives absolute control. And control gives you, again, the control over yourself. Control of any object is control over one's own self. Let me briefly comment upon this point. Suppose there is a very powerful man, rich man, and maybe a king, and he has 100 slaves, one to fetch his footstool, another to put his feet on that stool, another to massage, another to oil, another to fan, another to etc. And he thinks, I have complete control over these 100 slaves. But has he got control over himself? He is totally a slave to his slaves, because if they refuse to do that, he cannot do it. He has lost control of himself. You see, the point I'm trying to make, if you do not have control over the external objects, then you do not have control over yourself. And that's why I used the word slave. You know why? You give slave. Who is a slave? Who has no power to do anything he or she likes, but only to listen to fear. Fear controls them. Suppose you give little freedom to them. Would they be slaves? Would they like to fetch your footstool? They will rebel against you, is it not? If they have freedom, they will rebel against you. Then you have no control over them at all. But this profoundly disturbs us. Why? Because a person doesn't have control over himself. Then who is the real master? A real master is one who doesn't depend upon anyone else, including God. Then God comes cringing, I am here, do you want anything? No, get out. Okay, wait there. If I need anything, I will call you. Otherwise, God will be God. He says, this fellow is dependent upon me. So when he calls, then I will decide when to come and when not to come. But when a person has absolute control over himself, God comes and becomes a slave and says, come on, I am ready. Command me. Okay, I will think about it later on. You wait. Do you follow what I am talking about? When a person has absolute control over himself, then he doesn't need the help of God. And that's mostly, most paradoxical, ironical thing is, when you don't need, then God comes running. Most of the time, our experience is, when we need something, he is nowhere to be found. And when everything is finished, then he comes. This is the normal experience of worldly people, but not spiritual people. There is a beautiful story or parable, whatever, you know, there was a devotee. And always wherever he walks, he used to see the footsteps of God by his own footsteps. So once he had to cross a dangerous forest area. And this devotee was frightened. And then he was praying, Lord, please protect me. And then with his name, with closed eyes, and he entered. The moment he entered, he saw that the other footsteps completely disappeared. What to do? No, there is no choice, but he had to cross somehow or other. He was cursing God also. Because cursing God also is one way of thinking him only. And by the way, so Sri Ramakrishna was reported by some devotee, such and such a person was criticizing you. Sri Ramakrishna said, I am so happy. He said, that man is criticizing you, and so you are so happy. He said, he is thinking of me only. Yeah, somehow or other he is thinking of me. Kamsa was only thinking of Krishna. Hiranyakashipu was only thinking of Vishnu. Their minds are focused. The more you hate somebody, the more actually you are thinking of that person. Even you won't think of some person whom you love so much. So this devotee crossed. The moment he crossed the danger zone, immediately the other footsteps arrived. This devotee really got angry. He said, Lord, what type of fellow you are? When I was safe and you were nicely chatting with me, and as soon as I entered into danger zone, you disappeared. A gentle voice came and said, my child, look closely at those footsteps back there. Do they appear like your footsteps? The foot measurement, you know. Yours is a smaller measurement. Mine is a bigger measurement. Don't you have eyes to see? When I saw you were in danger, then I carried you in my arms. Believe me, every devotee, every sincere spiritual aspirant, every devotee of God, sincere devotee of God, God carries him in his hands when there is danger. But certain events, God thinks, are necessary for us, for our growth. That's why he allows certain events to happen. Anyway, coming back, when a person becomes so much advanced in concentration, that he has become master of all the five subtle elements, pancha, sukshma, mahabhutas, then there is no object in this world over which he doesn't have control, because he has knowledge of every object. This is what the Upanishad is telling. If you have the knowledge of gold, then even a billion ornaments made out of gold, you know all about them. You know some ornament which would be made 1 billion years hence, because an ornament is nothing but gold with a particular name and form. So if you have the knowledge of iron, then any instrument that is object that is made out of iron, you will have knowledge. So if you have the knowledge of the five subtle elements, then you have knowledge of every object in this world, because the whole world is only an outcome of these five subtle elements. What happens? Then, nirvichara vaisharathye adhyatma prasada. As soon as he acquires the tremendous knowledge of all the five elements, by becoming one with them, what happens? His whole body and mind becomes completely joyous, filled with bliss, filled with calmness, filled with peace. Why is it so? Why? Because every object we are seeking is only for one purpose. What is that purpose? We want to have some nice experience. We want to have pleasure. We want to have happiness, isn't it? But once we know that object, then even without going to that object, that happiness comes to us, because knowledge contains everything. There are other reasons, a very important reason, which I am going to come right now. The third step of this is called meditation on ananda. That is called sananda samadhi. Sananda samadhi means what? So ananda, any object you have knowledge, it gives you control, I said. And when you have control, can it act contrary to your desire? What is the meaning of control? Control means you have complete control over it. Let me give an example. Suppose you are very fond of a sweetmeat. Sweets. You are fond of sweets. And you will be very happy if you get sweets. Suppose one day you get only some bitter food. Bitter food. What will happen to you? Your whole happiness is gone. But we are not talking about an ordinary person. Here is a person who has complete, he knows the subtle elements of this. Now, in the light of what we discussed before, what is the sweetmeat made up of? Five subtle elements. What is the bitter things made up of? Five subtle elements. And he has complete knowledge and he has complete control. When both seemingly opposite things are made up of the same main element, where is the question of discrimination? Or here is my friend, here is my enemy. That is only if you don't know the origins. I gave you many times this example. Suppose you know, you come to know there is neighboring house, there is a man who is most annoying person. He annoys you and you also annoy him. You wish him dead, he also wishes you. That is because we don't know, they don't know each other. Now supposing later on you come to know that your brothers born of the same mother's womb, but you have somehow been separated, and then you come to know after a long time, what would be your reaction? Don't go on arguing with me now, brothers also quarrel, the sisters also quarrel and all those things. I know that. I am giving an illustration. Once we know that this is what my brother or my mother or my somebody who is so close to me, my child, then all that discrimination disappears. Then who is a friend? Now here is an interesting point. With regard to your own mother and father, do you say this is my friend and this is my enemy? With regard to someone who is our beloved, the question of being friendly and being inimical doesn't arise. So when a person knows the essence of all objects in this world, then he will have, no, as I said, he will have complete control. Control means control over my mind. That means what? If it is sweet also, I will react exactly the same way. If it is bitter also, I will react exactly in the same way. From a gross way of speaking, I am talking now. So this person, as soon as he becomes master of that second step, nirvichara vaisaradhya, means he becomes an expert in focusing his mind, adhyatma prasadaha, means he will have his whole mind as it were cooled. Everything gives him bliss. In Upanishadic language it is called madhu. You know madhu, honey? Madhuvata ritayate. A realized soul is the winds are so sweet to us. Madhuksharanti sindhavaha. All the waters are also giving me tremendous joy. For a realized soul, everything gives joy. Why? You know what happens? For a realized soul, suppose you know, you see two persons fighting with a sword, with a gun, whatever. You see them. And then you see, oh, they are bitter enemies. You see that? If you are fighting with someone else, it gives you bitterness. Is it not? Supposing you are acting on a stage. And unfortunately, you and your brother both are actors. And you are acting in one role, your brother is acting as opposite party. And you are having a sword fight. Now, are you filled with hatred or are you filled with joy? Why? Because first of all, who falls and who is the victor and who is the... It is all decided by the script, not by you. Secondly, so you say, oh, my brother has acted very well, like this, you know, there was a drama. And there was a scene where one person had to shoot the other person. So he shot him. And big bang noise was there. The other fellow, like that, he fell down. He acted so well. All the audience got encore, encore. He got up again, second time. It was so nice. Imagine these two brothers, you know, one fellow killed the other fellow on the stage. Then they go to the green room. That one fellow rushes to the other fellow, embrace, how wonderfully you acted. When you fell dead, my heart actually leaped into my mouth. It was so realistic. They were congratulating well. I cannot refrain but tell you, no? There is a Balram Babu's house which was donated to Ramakrishna Mission by Balram Babu's daughter. Later on, her grandchildren, one of the grandchild became a monk in our order, and one of them became ordinary householder. And that fellow's wife told him, let us not lose this house, it's a valuable house, let us go to court. So they were living, as our that Shambhu Maharaj, he was living also in the one part of the Balram Babu's house, the other part, the other fellow was living. And there was a big window in between these two people. It's big, full of windows. So, you see, every day at 12 o'clock, this fellow, hey brother, today ilish much koreche, it is now. So, first class fish curry is made, and he will pass a big plate through the window. And then, sometimes the court case, you know, it went on for years and years together. So, this one day this person was supplying this food. The Swami was telling, hey, bhai, don't forget, tomorrow court case is there. Let us start at this time. What a wonderful drama. Because they are close cousin brothers. And one became a monk and one went against our mission. Ultimately, of course, the whole thing came to our mission only. But what I am telling is, if we don't have complete knowledge, then here is my friend, here is enemy, here is good, here is bad, here is life, here is death. But if we know the entire source, then it will be, everything will be what is called in devotees' language, Leela. Leela means divine play. Now, the next step is meditation on the Ananda. How does Ananda come? Now, let me give a brief introduction in this class. According to both Vedanta and Sankhya, the cosmology is like this. First of all, there is only one object, and that is called Brahman or whatever you call it. According to Sankhya, gives a little bit different. I am coming from the Vedantic point of view. And that becomes first creation, unmanifest. It is called unmanifest. So in Bhagavad Gita, he says, all beings come out of the manifest, from coming from the unmanifest, and they live for some time as manifested beings, and then in the end they again go back to into that unmanifest. Scientists are saying that here is an object, it came out of matter, and after it remains as a special particular object with name and form, and after some time where does it go back? Into the same matter, like wave. A wave comes out of water, and then it plays for some time. Then we have this small wave, this a big wave, and wave this side, wave that side, and beautiful wave, ugly wave, clean wave, dirty wave, etc., etc. And after some time, what happens to the wave or a bubble? It goes back into, goes back means what? When was it not water? All the time it is water only. But we are mesmerized by name and form. That's why we don't see properly. Now, what is the point? From the unmanifest, still unmanifest, very subtle, is called ahankara. Not our egotism, but it is called cosmic egotism. And from cosmic egotism, three things come out. Now, why do three things come out? Because another way of looking at any object is, every object consists of three gunas. You know that? Sattva, rajas, and tamas. So from the sattvika part of the cosmic ego comes the mind. From the rajasika part of the ahankara, or cosmic ego, comes out the five senses of knowledge and 5 senses of action. And the tamasika part, from the tamasika part of the cosmic ego, comes 5 subtle elements and 5 gross elements. But what is the point? That all, everything, the whole world, and the mind, and the ahankara, all these things stem from one source only. One source only. That means the I consciousness and the mind which is used by the I consciousness to grasp any object, and the object. So that one single material, as if dividing itself into 3 parts, as I, as the mind, and as the object. Now, in my last class also I have mentioned that whenever we have any experience, 3 things are necessary, if you remember. I have to be here, consciousness, the mind has to be here, and then object should be there. If object is there, mind is there, there would be no experience. If I am there, mind is there, no object is there. If I am there, object is there, but there is no mind, there would be no experience. All the 3 must be present. To make my point clear, I would like to give the illustration. You go to bed. You are alone in your house. You lie down on your bed. Very soon, you have a dream. You see the world exactly like this in your dream. How many things are there? You, the observer, is there. Your mind and all the objects in this world. All these 3 came from you, yourself in your dream. Your dream I, your dream mind, and your dream objects sprung from which source? How many sources? Only one source? If you understand that point, you understand now what the Sankhya philosophy wants us to understand. Now what does that mean? What it means is, the whole world exists where? In the mind. Where is Swami Dayatmananda now? Outside, at certain distance from you, facing you, sitting on a chair, and there is a table in front of you. This is your idea. But where is this idea really? In your mind. Do you see the point? And where is the reaction going on? I like the talk, I don't like the talk. I like the Swami, I don't like this. All these ideas are going. When you like, I like the Swami, I am very happy. I don't like him, I am not so happy. These ideas are also going on where? This is a most important point, because the whole universe exists only as idea in each one of our minds. The whole world, universe exists in the form of an idea. What did I say? In our minds. Even that expression, our minds, if I am talking to you in the dream like this, in whose mind that idea is existing? Only one mind. We will come to that point later on. Here is a sweet, our normal experience. And when I encounter this object called a sweet, where am I encountering that object? In my mind. And the reaction comes. Reaction in the form of pleasure and pain. Who is creating that pleasure and pain? That means, where is that happiness in my mind? What is the point I am making is that we interact with any object, that means any, the whole universe, only for one purpose. I want knowledge. And that knowledge is, the object is different and I am different. This is called ignorance. But when a person progresses in this spiritual life, in concentration, then what happens is, he comes to the knowledge. The source of this whole entire universe and the source of my mind as well, and me, the ego that is reflecting and becoming aware of this whole universe, becoming aware of my mind, becoming aware of all the objects in my mind, they all spring from one source. The moment we understand that fact, then all the ananda comes only from my mind. Now when I have that power, either to react positively or negatively, with happiness, without happiness, who has that power? Myself. That means I have the power to convert everything into a positive experience. Let me conclude this talk with one illustration. Sri Ramakrishna gives this illustration. There was one Raghunath Das. He was a soldier. He was a devotee, greatest devotee of Rama. And once his own fellow soldier, a Muslim, he stabbed him and he was on death bed. And then after some time, few minutes, somebody came running, saw him, and then they understood somebody nearby, there was no enemy. Not enemy party has not come. Somebody nearby must have stabbed him. So he was asked, who stabbed you? Because he was having consciousness. He could have told, so and so had stabbed me. Then what would they have done? They would have stabbed him. What did Raghunath Das reply? He said, that same Rama whom I worship, only he stabbed me. That means he is seeing his Ishtadevata also has come in the form of the person whom we say had stabbed him. But would Raghunath Das say he stabbed me? It is a play. And you know very well that the parable of Sri Ramakrishna, everything is Rama's will. So these are the facts we have to remember. When a person reaches this second stage, then he goes to the third stage, that we have that capacity to make any experience into a most blissful experience. But we can never do that until we reach the peak of the second step. That is why Patanjali Rishi very clearly says, Nirvichara Vaisharadhyaya Adhyatma Prasadaha. When a person attains the highest step of the second, peak of the second step, his mind becomes filled with peace and bliss and calmness and knowledge. Because that knowledge is one and the same. This is the introduction to the third type of meditation called Sa Ananda Samadhi. I will further discuss it in our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.